Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And here we go on a Friday morning. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in studio for WOR. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine. We've been talking this morning a little bit about how the city's looking great this time of year, Christmas time, the Christmas tree.
Christmas time, and yeah, it's cold if you don't have heat or electricity.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
But it's not been as cold as it has been in other periods. And the weather actually, somebody said to me this morning, you know, with the exception of Sandy, which is a very big exception, the weather has been good this
month. Biggest exception we've seen in
absolutely,
if not the whole history of New York, certainly the better part of it.
Well, you know, you see the whole history. The subways, I was talking last night, the subways, I think the IRT was started in 1900, completed in 1904, as I remember, and they've never flooded, so we've never had this kind of a surge, at least since 1900.
Yeah, before we get into that, another great event other than the Christmas tree, the sort of setting off the season here. Larry DePrimo, the NYPD guy bought the boots for the...
Yeah, great guy.
Great story, though.
It is a great story, and somebody captured it on film. But, you know, the truth of the matter is cops every day do things that help people. That's what they're there for. They're on the ground. They see people with problems. I can't tell you that everyone always stops, but a lot of them do. And a lot of non-civilians do as well.
We're seeing that now, obviously.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a great story and a great example. And I read in the paper Kelly gave him a set of cufflinks, which is a nice thing to do. And he deserves all the adulation credit. And he's got a smile on his face, I assume. But I think, more importantly, he represents something. And what he represents is the world's greatest police department. The tough men and women when they have to be, and they're compassionate because they're New Yorkers, and that's what they're trained to do, help people.
They have a different job than most of us. They're just like the rest of us.
I mean, I've always thought that we should call the police and fire our first preventers rather than our first responders. We focus on the response, but the fact that they keep crime from happening or keep fires from happening is the real thing. And wouldn't it be wonderful if they never had to arrest anybody or put out a fire?
Well, I gather they didn't have to do that on Monday, one of the safest days in a long time.
Well, you couldn't be safer. I think that's fair. It was actually a little more than 24 hours. No stabbings, no shootings, no murders. We're doing a great job of bringing crime down. It continues to come down, not just for the year, but month by month. There's some months it jumps up a little bit, up and down. There's some noise in the data. But it's accumulation of long-term things that you do, the diversification of the police department to reflect the community, all of the training that Ray Kelly and his troops put in, $8.5 billion of the taxpayers' money. We incarcerate a third fewer people, so these young kids, if they make one mistake, we don't send them automatically off to jail to learn how to be worse criminals. We try to help them outside the system so that hopefully they don't go back in. And if they're dangerous to society, sure, you put them in. But
Young Men's Initiative, I know it's early, but any indication that you're making
some... We're trying to get kids reunited with their fathers, which is a big problem, getting them mentors, getting them IDs, helping them with their schoolwork, a variety of those kinds of things. There's no one magic bullet, if you pardon the pun, that's going to solve all these problems. The police department, stop and frisk is, people say, oh, well, the numbers of times you find guns going down, you don't have to do it. No, the reason they're going down is because you keep doing it. And so, young, tough kids that think it's want to be wise guys and carry a gun, it's a macho thing, they start learning that's not a smart thing to do, that we're going to catch them, and there's a penalty for that. And over a long period of time, if you keep doing it, crime will keep coming down. New York City's crime rate is so... per capita is so dramatically lower. I forget the numbers, but, 2,000 or 3,000, we're going to have, let's say, 400 murders for a number. Chicago, Philadelphia, Detroit, Baltimore. These are cities where if I thought we could help those cities, I would be happy to send people I think we should help each other. But there, you know, we'd have thousands of murders if we had every year, if we had their rate per capita. And the truth of the matter is our murder rate keeps going down. Population keeps going up. The murder number of murders keep going down. It's a trend that is, you just got to constantly, you'll never get to zero, but you certainly have to have that as an objective.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to take a break a minute or so early here because we'll get into the Sandy thing and the raising of money and your trip to Washington and the future and all of the major hurdles we need to get over. We'll do that in just a moment. The Mayor's Hour brought to you by Ray Catena Motor Car Corporation. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. Of course, Sandy is first and foremost the recovery right now.
Gone unless you were hurt.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
People are starting to think about other things, and we cannot forget there are still thousands of people who don't have electricity, thousands of people who don't have heat, thousands of people who lost all their personal belongings. 42 people died. A woman goes to get help and her kids get washed away. Two kids are playing in their house. The tree comes down and kills them both. Some guy sleeping in his bed and a tree comes down. Somebody steps in a puddle of water with an electric cable in it and they get electrocuted. It could have been a lot worse. This was not a particularly strong storm as big hurricanes go. It was a wide one. The problem that we had was it occurred at the worst possible time, full moon, high tide. And it took the worst possible path. We would have been better off, actually, if the hurricane probably had hit us straight on.
Correct, yeah.
Because you would not have had the tidal surge.
Or if it had gone slightly east and we were on the inside.
That's correct. Right. We were on the wrong side of this hurricane. It took a left turn into New Jersey, and that meant we were on the northeast side of it. Winds go counterclockwise in the northern hemisphere around a low-pressure area, and that just drove all the water up. So if you go up to Westchester, or some parts of Queens and Brooklyn, there lots of trees came down, power lines. Those are easy to fix, and they tend not to do any damage other than to take, if they fall in the house or your car or you, yes, they do. But generally, their damage is to take out power. And it's easy to find where the lines are, so Con Ed or LIPR or somebody can get to them reasonably quickly and fix them. If they have lots, it takes a lot more time. I don't know about LIPR, but Con Ed certainly knew the storm was coming and had put out calls for help from across the country. And all these utilities share
resources. I thought the response was pretty good.
Right, and they did have a lot. I don't know about out on Long Island, but you could see around here. Our problem was the water surging, and we had I ordered everybody to evacuate, and a handful of people did not, and a handful of those paid a terrible price for it when there was a snowstorm, if you remember, a couple days later, and a lot of people wanted me to issue an evacuation order, and after talking to the forecasters, it did not look like it would create any real problems, and I said no, and everybody said, oh, you got to do it just to be safe. No, because then the next time people would say, oh, they have these orders and there's not wasn't a real danger, the crying wolf. So you got to be very careful when you do it. But it's one of these things, if you make the mistake and you should have, you get blasted. And if you do it without, and it turned out it wasn't needed, that's probably even worse in many senses because then people won't listen to the next
time. You were in Washington talking with people about relief money. The number is extraordinary. I think the number, if you take in New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, $89 billion. $89 billion is a total number that they're talking about.
The only numbers I know about
are New York.
Yeah, New York City's. Basically $15 billion without counting any money from FEMA or any government agency, but reducing damage by the amount of private insurance. So if private insurance, if you had a dollar's worth of damage and insurance paid for 50 cents of it, we'd say the loss that we are worried about looking to money for the government would be 50 cents, not the dollar.
And so the $15 billion includes that discount, that insurance company discount?
It was $19 billion. Without that, there's $4 billion in insurance. Get you down to $15.
Right.
I don't know why people keep writing these stories that the governor's numbers are false and whatever. The governor's numbers, at least as far as New York City, we gave him the numbers and we work very well with him and he understands the numbers. Now the question is, what can we get in Washington? Washington, and he'll lobby hard. I'm sure Governor Christie will. And I was down there, saw a dozen, 10 people or something.
You saw Harry Reid. What response did you get from the leader of the Senate?
Number one, everybody is nice. Both sides of the aisle, both houses.
To you, obviously.
Yeah, right, I mean, they couldn't be nicer. Yeah. They understand you have a problem. They know why you're there. Their job is they get 1,000 people every day coming into their office asking for something. What I tried to assure them is that our numbers are not picked out of the blue. We have to make estimates of how much damage is done, but you don't have, you'll never get accurate real numbers. You can only
until after the fact,
and even after then, I don't know how do you calculate it. And one of the problems is if they give you money to help those people who were damaged, how do you make sure the aid goes to the right people in the right proportion? There's no simple answers here. What we're doing, which they all seem to find fascinating, is rather than say to you, John, you got a problem, go get your own electrician, plumber, carpenter, you're on your own. When you get everything done, give us a call. Maybe we'll give you some money, maybe you won't. I don't think that that's particularly practical, and it's hard enough to get a plumber or a carpenter, electrician. We don't turn out enough plumbers, carpenters, electricians. Those are good occupations, and they're good occupations because there aren't enough of them, so they can command higher prices. It's the marketplace works. And normally, you can't get them in any quick response times. And now, when everybody wants them, you would not be able to do that. So Kaz Holloway, our deputy mayor for operations, came up with this idea along with some of his staff. We've signed contracts with six big contractors. Their responsibility, and we've carved up the city and given them each a section, they go and they are putting together teams, an electrician, a carpenter, a plumber, or maybe somebody to supervise and coordinate it. And then you sign up, and we've had 10,000 people sign up. We go out, we'll do an estimate. If you tell you what needs to be done, just to get you back heat, hot water, and electricity, not fix anything else. Right now, we're just focusing on life-threatening things. Your wallboard needs to be replaced, your floors, plenty of time.
Your circuit breaker panel.
This is the circuit breaker panel, the hot water heater, and the space heater, the boiler, or whatever, however you have gas or electric or oil. And we go and we make these assessments. If you want us to do the work, we will schedule it. And FEMA pays for this 100%, and it doesn't come off any other FEMA programs, which you may or may not qualify for. I don't want to get involved in that. I've got to focus and have my people just focus.
Has FEMA ever done this before?
No.
No, you guys cut the deal with FEMA.
And they deserve a lot of credit. They came along, mm-hmm. and we worked it out with them. They deserve as much credit as Kaz and all the other people do. Another team effort. We're just getting it going, but we've had 10,000 people sign up. We've done 3,000 or 4,000 estimates already. We've got work orders on, I looked at the numbers this morning, something like 1,800 locations already. They've finished 100. They're working on 300 yesterday. I'll get the numbers today. We have a few hundred teams out there. By next week, our schedule is trying to get 400 or 500 teams. It's a question of how fast we can put these teams together and get them out there. It's interesting. You're trying to figure out how many places do you have to go. Well, you look at Con Ed and LIPA where there's no power. That's, I think, down to about 8,000. But one account for them could be a whole big building. Some buildings, 500 units, don't meter individually. It's 1 meter for the whole building. So if it doesn't tell you the number of places you've got to send a repairman. It's also true that in that 500-person building, if they had 500 separate meters, it may be 1 feeder into the building. So on the other side, if you visited it once, you may be able to take care of it. I think numbers like 6,000 locations, individual houses, the single and two-family houses, there's probably 5,000 of them. There's probably 1,000 medium-sized buildings, 3 units or more, less than 6 stories. And then there is about 20-odd bigger buildings that either have no electricity or no heat or both. We're working on the big ones. The big ones are harder because you have to put a generator outside. Maybe you have to put a big boiler outside. But if you could fix those, you get a lot of people back into their homes. The intermediate buildings are middle problem. Once again, you get a bigger payoff, and then you get to the houses. But we're working on houses at the same time. More worrisome is we've got to find a ways to get stores going. And people say, why are you worried about stores? If you can't go to the store to get food, you've got to, we've got to carry meals to you or something, and we don't exist without supplies of stores and barbershops and, you know, every and people's jobs are in these places. So that's what Bob Steele and Seth Pinsky are working on, and we've already got, and we're using some money from the Mayor's Fund to Advance New York, where we've already got $40 million in donations, but to give grants and low-interest loans and some combination of both to small businesses to help them get going, focusing on getting the electricity to those buildings and cleaning up around them. At the same time, we're trying to do, you know, trying to do everything. But the program where we're doing it, FEMA pays, and we take all the aggravation out of it. And also, from FEMA's point of view, it's very good because we can assure that the charges are reasonable. These contractors are big contractors. They know what they're doing. They know what it takes to put in a boiler or electric panel or something, how much is a reasonable compensation for everybody. So I think it's a win-win-win, but it's not going to get done overnight. And, a big chunk of the city, as we started this conversation, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. And I want to make sure that it's not out of sight, out of mind of the administration.
What percentage do you think the federal government's responsibility should be in this?
I don't know how to answer that. We do all pay into the federal government to share the risk, if you want to think about it that way. We pay our federal taxes to provide services like defense, which can only be done that way. We pay the federal government to help those who really can't help themselves. We as a society don't want people dying, starving in the streets, social programs. We pay into government to prepare and to have resources standing by. There were enormous amount of Navy and Army and National Guard and Red Cross, and I go on and on.
Coast Guard.
Sure. Right. Coast Guard was all over the place. Homeland Security, which includes FEMA. I don't know how do you answer that question. There are policies that FEMA has. They typically pay 75% of a kind of loss, but it's not easy to calculate. The Senator Schumer and Gillibrand have said they're going to try to get FEMA to pay 100%. That would be helpful. They have programs that you can qualify for up to $31,000, but if you have your own insurance company's got to pay. Then you got to try to get a loan. Then you've got to qualify and that sort of thing. So, like all big bureaucratic things, the question will really be in Washington, if Washington were to say we're happy to help, but only if we can find other savings, that's a very big problem. Because savings means cutting something else, so there's not a big constituency from the other side. And those programs may be programs in New York. Well, we don't need them to tell us to take our own money to pay ourselves. We can do that without them, thank you. And, you know, the things in Washington I talked about was that the numbers are legit. Cuomo, and I assume Christie, I haven't talked to Governor Christie, but, you know, he's a smart guy and he's not going to fool around here. They're real numbers. You can argue whether or not, your question, should they pay or shouldn't they? But the first thing is we've got to make sure we all submit real numbers that we're working together. And somebody said, why wasn't Andrew down with you? Because we shouldn't go the same day. You want to have every other day and every third day if Christie comes along. We're all in this together. We're all helping each other. And that'll just is more of a chance to make our case. And these senators and congressmen, both parties, they have disasters in their areas and they want help there. So, you know, it's just the shared risk concept. And the other thing that we spent a lot of time talking about was deductibility, the fiscal cliff, which to my mind isn't a cliff. It's a gradual slope, and nothing's going to happen on January 2nd. The stock market may react poorly. I'm not even sure of that. But there's no cliff. This is just a something that plays well on your radio show and in the newspapers. Cuts and tax rates go over a long period of time. But if they were to reduce the deductibility of state and local taxes, a place like New York would be very severely hurt. People would leave because some people would leave because all of a sudden the effect
It's a huge tax increase.
Huge tax increase for New York City, for New York State, California, Illinois, Massachusetts, and very unfair, I think. And the other thing is, if they were to eliminate or reduce the ability to deduct charitable contributions, the federal government and state governments are defunding higher education and even regular education throughout this country. It's a disaster. But it would be so much worse if they couldn't at least turn to private sector people and say, hey, help us here. And the bottom line is, if you ask for a dollar for your charity and it's deductible at somebody with a 35% tax rate, it costs them 65 cents. If it's not deductible, it costs them 100 cents. And they're just less
you're just
likely
not gonna
to
do it. No, you're
they're going to do some extent, but do it a lot less.
All right. We'll pick up on this when we continue here. Let me take another break. By the way, let me encourage you as well to call if you've got a question for the mayor, 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Coming right back. Joe's got some news and more. The Mayor's Hour is brought to you by Racatina Lexus. Experience the legend in luxury. Racatina Lexus, New Jersey. Route 35, Oakhurst. Route 9, South Freehold. Boston Post Road, Larchmont. Stop in today. Take advantage of their golden opportunity Lexus sale. Friday's opportunity for me and you to hear from Mayor Michael Bloomberg. That's what we're doing here. 21 minutes before 9 o'clock. Sandy, first and foremost, and its impact.
Absolutely.
Impact to the budget. You already had budget problems before the 31st of October.
I think there's two things. One, it clearly hurts commerce, and there's less activity, wages, sales tax, people having a good time and getting the things they need. No power doesn't help. In different neighborhoods, southern Manhattan was out. That's a big part of jobs and shopping.
There's still some very big buildings that
are out
in lower
Manhattan. There's still some down in lower Manhattan, although it's a small number, and hopefully most will be back by January 1st. They were certainly working 24/7 outside to get extra electricity and steam and whatever in them. That's the bad news. The good news is third quarter Wall Street was better than expected, and that's a big driver of our economy. Net-net for New York City, we don't think that there's any problem. We could come out pretty good, or certainly I don't see any need at the moment to reduce our estimates of what our taxes total are going to be. The next time we have to come up with a budget is in January, so a month and a half, 2 months from now. But at the moment, not any cause to panic. Our expenses are going up, and that's why we've spent $1.1 billion in rough numbers, or think we will by the time all this is done, for city agencies, overtime and equipment and that sort of stuff. Gasoline, those fire engines.
Any chance of reimbursement on those
items?
That's
in the $15 billion. A lot of places don't do things until they get the money. I have always thought, and we've always done for the last 11 years, if there's something the city really needs, we go do it, and then we try to figure out how to pay for it. If we need a new fire engine, trust me, we're going to get it. Another ambulance, we're going to get it. If Ray Kelly needs to put more overtime to keep you safe, we're going to do it. Then we'll try to figure it out. But you can't let the economics drive what you do. You have to let the needs of the city. Now, that doesn't mean you should do everything, and doesn't mean you do the luxury things, but if there is a real need, particularly if it's security or education for our kids or something, you do it, and then you figure out afterwards.
A story this morning, South Street Seaport in terrible shape.
Yeah, it was that's been a basket case for a long time economically, and there was real light at the end of the tunnel for somebody coming in and doing something. And I don't know that whether the story's overblown or not. It's just too early to tell. We'll certainly work with everybody to try to get that back on track. There was a story about the South Street, the Staten Island subway station. Brand new station, a lot of damage. You can sit there and say, why didn't people plan for this? But the subways were built in 1900, 1905, and they've never flooded. Nobody expected this. Con Ed, they built a wall around their high voltage thing, 12 feet. It'd never come remotely close to that. They had 14 feet of water. So it's easy to second guess. If they built it 15 feet and we had 16 feet, you'd criticize them as well. The bottom line is, particularly on the coast, we live in low-lying areas. People have done this from day one. People like to live on the beach. Why? They used to, a lot of places, they get their food from the ocean, so they want to be there. A lot of us want to live there because it's a great place to live and raise your kids. Low-lying areas on the beach can get flooded. We're on an island, surprise, surprise, or to a great extent, other than the Bronx.
Should those people expect to be backstopped?
Well, the federal government does have a program which you have to pay for. It's not giving you, but they are the ones willing to write flood insurance. Generally, there's some exceptions, but generally the private sector will not write flood insurance because it's so unpredictable. And you'd say, well, why don't they just price it higher? I think it's the unpredictability as much, because you can, you know, in theory, you, whatever the risk is, you figure out what the risk is and you charge more. But you have to be able to, the way insurance works is you spread the risk over.
You have to actuarially figure out exactly what,
yeah, but also, the, you know, if you come to an insurance company and you want a $1 million policy, they don't take that risk. They take it. They say, thank you very much. You pay them. But they will sell off, let's say, nine pieces of 10% each to other companies so that if you die, it's not, they may get a service fee, but they'll only lose, they don't make as much, but they don't lose as much. The federal government can spread flood insurance over large and large numbers of people, and they do charge for it. Whether they charge the what an actuary would say is a fair rate, I don't know. You'd think common sense says government would always try to charge a little bit less or a lot less. But do I think we should keep people from building houses on the beach? No, I don't. And what's more, from a practical point of view, it's not going to happen. It's fascinating the number of people that call us from around the country. I've got ideas on how you'll build new housing and all that sort of thing. And you know, and they really mean well, and I love it. But it's not where an enormous amount of our houses got wiped out. Just the low-lying areas, there's something like 68,000 houses, okay? Think about that number. It's bigger than most cities. That's just low-lying areas. And out of that, between houses destroyed by the storm and houses that we think, when you look at them, they're not going to be able to be fixed up and they're going to fall down, or if they're going to fall on somebody else, we will tell you.
You already started that program, haven't you?
We haven't ripped anything.
Demolishing?
Only if it was about to collapse on something. We don't go in and destroy a house. We may tell you you can't live there. It's unsafe. But you could, out of the maybe 750 houses that had these red stickers, 180, I think is the number roughly, were destroyed by the storm. Another 200, let's say, are so damaged that if common sense says they will not be able to be rebuilt, and the others will get rebuilt. And incidentally, for the 350, 400 locations where houses get destroyed and ripped down, people will rebuild that, or somebody will buy the property from them, and they will rebuild that. We have 400 houses lost out of 68,000 in the floodplain. So there's no lots of big empty space to come in and build new houses. You're talking about, and one house is okay, the one next door not, and then you go five down, and then another one not okay. And
The governor has put money in his budget, I think the $9 billion, to sort of retrofit, if you will, infrastructure from a waterproofing or hardening.
Yeah, some things you can do.
But, I mean, what do you think, what sort of things do you think are practical along those lines?
If you take
wall around New York
big,
City.
Big story in the New York Times today about sewage treatment plants that are offline and are going to be offline for a while. New York City, we have worked and spent a lot of the taxpayers' money.
The city has done a great job, actually.
We had Rockaways, we shut it down, and you bypass it, and you put the sewage.
One under the Triborough Bridge they rebuilt years ago.
We've been rebuilding all of these, moving pumps up. And some things are just so low you can't do it. You have to just shut it down. You wait for the storm to go. In the meantime, all the sewage does bypass and go into the water, but it happens very infrequently. And then as soon as the waters go, it takes you a couple days, you get the plant back up. And so ours were a few days later, all working, and we didn't shut down very many of them. other places have not put the money into infrastructure. And what has always annoyed me is they then come and say, oh, you know, you people who live in New York City, come and live in our town or our state or our county because our taxes are lower. Yeah, there's no free lunch. The taxes are lower and now you don't have any sewage system. I mean, you know, come on.
But again, the
New York taxpayers are a lot smarter.
Do you think you can waterproof the underground electric in let's say this vicinity down here where we are down by Wall Street?
Con Ed did not have any real damage in underground electric. They had one substation.
On the East River.
Correct.
That went out.
But if it wasn't for that, and if they'd built the wall 2 feet higher, should have, would have, and could have. They didn't have any. Con Ed, I keep saying this, and everybody wants to shoot me for it. They happen. If you look at the national statistics, this happens to be virtually the best utility company in the country. Are they perfect? No. And it's a lot of should have, would have, and could have, and second guessing. But they have done a very good job, and they did not have a lot of damage. They shut down their steam system because that can, if you get cold water on a hot steam pipe, it can
shatter the pipes.
Right. So it does mean you don't have steam, which a lot of big buildings use to drive their heating and air conditioning stuff. You don't have that for a week or two, but you don't have to go and redo everything. They protected their plant. Could you plug up the subways? In theory, you certainly can. I don't think that you can close off the harbor, but you could plug the subways. I think a legitimate question is, if this happens only once 110 years, and if you get it back as quickly as they did, is that a good use of your money? You'd probably be better off taking those dollars, I think, and expanding the subway out to where people have now live compared to when they did 100 years ago when the subways were built, or have more trains and better signaling so you can have more trains in the same track. There are a lot of things you could do with money to make the subway system better. But there are things that, and the governor's right, there are things you can do. Can you go and change the outlook for individual houses in low-lying areas? No, I don't see any practical ways. If you built a big wall around it, nobody would want to live in a cave.
Let me switch the subject because we're running out of time here and touch on a couple of things. You wanted to make an announcement about water meters?
Yeah, we announced a program yesterday, I think it was, where we're going to give you a grace period on paying your property tax bill. The city council will approve that. Chris Quinn.
Is that for everybody or only people that are in designated?
Only people, and that we're only in a very small area if you got red stickers, basically.
Okay.
But what we'll go in, Chris Quinn and Dominic Recchia, who's the head of the finance committee or whatever, we're going to do the same thing for water bills, basically, and for a bigger. You still have to pay your bill, but you just don't have to pay it until next June 30th rather
again,
than now.
Again, in the designated areas.
In the designated areas. And it will, there's no interest. You still have to pay it, but it's a little bit of help.
Okay. You want to take? I can go to a break if you want.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go to a break. We'll come back right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you, of course. We've got, let's see, one or two lines open. 800-321-0710. The business of the city of New York never stops. We'll be right back. All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some folks on the phone here. We're going to start with Joe in Brooklyn. Joe, your question for the mayor. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Joe.
I'm general contractor in the New York City area, and I've been looking into doing modular construction, especially for the homes that were destroyed in Hurricane Sandy. One of the challenges that we're having is that the building department has no process for doing plumbing inspections for modular homes that are built out of state, and I wanted to know if there's any plan to put any program into place or if you can respond to that.
I don't know, but if you stay on, I'll have somebody get your name and phone number and have somebody from the buildings department give you a buzz.
All right, he's on hold, so we'll get to Joe some info on that one. Let me see here, Danny in the Rockaways. Hi, Danny, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Danny.
Danny, the president of the 100 Precinct Council, how are you?
Good.
I know everybody's working very hard down here, but I have to tell you this. I know some of the local politicians are pushing. We really have to get the air tested down here. I'm going to tell you, I'm the one who has one of these coughs, and everybody else does too. Now, it can't be because we're on antibiotics. I went through a whole week of it. So did other people. It's not working. I got emails from doctors saying, Danny, it's real. So I want to know, when can we get the air tested, at least down here, to see if it's just sand or anything?
Danny, I'll have somebody take a look at it from the Department of Health. Keep in mind, the Rockaways are on the ocean, and the breeze, you know, keeps the air clean. It's not like you're living in a place where there's a pocket and the dirt gets in the air and it doesn't go away. There was a lot of sand. Most of it has been cleaned off the streets. All of the trash and debris that we picked up, I flew over Reese Park the other day. There had been enormous amount of debris there. That's almost all been loaded into trucks and taken away to landfills. We've taken away something like 380,000 tons. If I get my numbers right, 380,000 tons of debris so far. And it still comes out. You can see in a neighborhood, all of a sudden, there's a pile outside a house because they just got around to ripping out the everything in the basement kind of thing. But that gets less and less
what
with time.
What about the trees? Burning the trees over
we don't
at,
burn
Floyd
trees.
Bennett, at Floyd Bennett, they were thinking of doing that.
They may have a few, but that fundamentally, there's just so many trees you couldn't possibly. You chop it up into mulch, and then it goes to landfills, or people use it around other trees. And most of that's not here. It's sort of inland, if you will. There's some, but most
yeah, no. The number of trees lost was just phenomenal. All right, we put Danny on hold there to help him as well. Let's see here, Mario in New Jersey. Good morning. You got the mayor.
Hi, yeah, Michael. I just got to ask you a question.
Sure.
How much do you want us to pay to go over the Throgs Neck Bridge and the George Washington Bridge?
I don't know. Well, it's this. Those aren't city bridges. You know, I don't know what the economics are. Keep in mind, people want these bridges kept up to speed. They want to use the money to build other things. So when you criticize the elected officials that set the tolls, you got to also think, do you want the things that they're spending that money on? But I just don't know what the economics of those bridges that state agency, I'm trying to remember which one. I don't know if it's Triborough Bridge or the Port Authority.
I think it's Port Authority.
Port Authority certainly is the George W.
And so is the Verizon.
So, he's like the Throgs Neck.
Throgs Neck. I think that's Triborough.
Is that Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority? Yeah, I just don't know. The city bridges, none of them have tolls. Brooklyn, Manhattan, Williamsburg, Queensboro, Edricotch. Then there is the Staten Island bridges. Those, I think, might be Port Authority bridges, too.
All right. I wanted to ask you the question about the taxi cabs lawsuit yesterday to stop the cab of tomorrow.
You know, we got to make some progress here. This is just craziness. This is a bunch of people just trying to protect their own self-interest and not doing anything to sit back and say, how do we give a better experience to the rider? The taxi industry has something that I don't know whether exists anyplace else in the world. We give them a permit, then they can trade it. It goes from $1 to $1 billion, and they get all the money, and the municipality that issues it gets none. There's no other thing. They have such a good deal. Why they just can't suck it up? And this is in their interest, too. The more taxis you have, the more business, the better taxis you have, the better it's going to be. They're all trying to hold somebody up for something. And you take a look at their campaign donations to different levels, some to at the local level, some at a state level. The reason it's so hard to get something done is exactly what's been going on. You see it now, and it's time to do something. But you go back and remember, it took years to do new kiosks for newspaper sales and bus shelters and that sort of thing. It was all a similar kind of thing. The government was involved and it shouldn't have been.
Mr. Mayor, I know you got a busy week ahead. We'll see you next Friday. Thank you very much, as always. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, straight ahead.